And the reaper will come for us all.
Hey, Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I am so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc.
Nailed it.
Just podc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time, unless like
almost.
I'm on vacation or like I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals, G-A-L-S, at reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. And if you don't
Thanks.
Want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay, thanks.
Rude.
Hello, I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
And today I'm going to tell you an awful story.
Based on the titling and the recorder thing, I kind of gathered that. Not looking forward to it.
I'm going to tell you about the Kent State Massacre. So, but before we get started, we are doing a pick your poison. And that's only because I could not for the life of me find a drink pairing that was appropriate for this. So pick whatever you want. But I highly suggest that you do pick something because this is not great. Anyway, cheers.
Cheers.
Bang. Oh boy.
Made sure to turn my mic on mute whenever I drink from mine because there's ice in there and it's Kelsey will give me the evil eye. When she has to edit it later.
You put ice in wine?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
It's white wine.
I do if it's like warm. But normally
that,
I don't.
That way I get some water because I need to hydrate.
True. Oh, man. Well, pick whatever you want. Kelty and I have every listener's favorite drink, and that is a Truly each. No, actually, we're sharing the same one. She keeps driving over here and taking a sip, and then I'll drive over there and take a sip. Like, it's a whole thing. We just love each other so much.
That's why this takes so long every time.
I know. Now, I have a bunch of resources, but I want to high-level it. I got a lot of information from history.com, Britannica.com, thelibrary.kent.edu, which that's cool. And of course, with Wikipedia. And there is some information in here at the top of the resources, if anybody ever actually goes there and looks at it, from the ACLU and some resources for what your right is to protest and resources for if you are protesting and you find yourself in a pickle. They have forms on there where you can print it out and keep it on your person in case you need to contact anybody or how to handle specific situations. Now, before I get started, I do want to kind of go over what a protest is. A protest is an event or action where people gather with others to publicly express their opinions about something that is happening in society. There are a variety of potential goals for a protest: influence public opinion, draw attention to and share information about a perceived injustice, gain a wide audience for the cause, push public policy or legislation forward, learn more about an issue, connect with others who feel passionate about the issue, speak one's truth, and a sense of being part of a larger movement. The overarching purpose of a protest is to demand change. Protests can take the form of marches, sit-ins, boycotts, and include speeches, music, chanting, performance art, poetry, using symbols, holding signs, and confronting people, assembling near symbols and in places of significance to the cause, for example, monuments, or occupying a specific building or space, like a college campus. Protests are among the many strategies people use to engage in activism and organizing with the goal of enacting change. In the U.S., protesting is a legal right granted by the First Amendment of the Constitution. The government may limit the time, place, and manner, but the restrictions must be reasonable and fair. The government cannot forbid you and others from assembling to discuss or protest issues. Throughout history, there have been times when law enforcement engaged in crackdowns on peaceful protests. According to the ACLU, quote, "In some cases, police cracked down on demonstrations through mass arrests, illegal use of force, or curfews," unquote. So now that we know that, we're going to talk about the Kent State Massacre. And I'm sure most of our listeners, or many of our listeners, have probably heard about this. I know when Kelsey saw it, she was like, "Oh, I know that." So she's aware of it. Samantha, how are you?
I feel like I've heard of it, but I don't know any of the details.
Okay. All right. Well, we're in for a ride. So anyways, it felt timely, so we're going to go over it. So what happened? Well, if you haven't guessed by now, protests happened at Kent State and some students were killed. There you go. End of podcast.
I feel like there's probably a little bit more involved.
Probably. Yeah. We'll see.
Otherwise, that would be the shortest episode we've ever done.
Okay, we're done. So a lot of stuff actually happened. And one of the things leading up to what happened on Kent State that we have to talk about, unfortunately, is the Vietnam War. I don't know about you, but I didn't learn a lot about the Vietnam War, if anything, when I was in school. Did you?
Yeah, you did? Okay. I mean, they covered it, that and the Korean War. I mean, it was a lot shorter than any of the other ones that we had to learn about. But yeah, I mean, we did have to cover it.
Yeah, it wasn't until I was an adult that I really learned more about it. Didn't even realize, like, I watched a lot of MASH growing up as a child, which I don't know why. That wasn't appropriate. But I did. Didn't know it was about the Vietnam War.
One of many things that wasn't appropriate.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. As a 9-year-old, I should not have been watching Three's Company. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, so yeah, I didn't learn much about the Vietnam War in high school. You know, it was just like the basics. And then, of course, as I became an adult, I started to realize that I really did enjoy learning about history. And I did learn a lot more about it. So I just wasn't like, I wanted to get kind of like a scale of what you knew about it. Because, yeah, like you said, they just don't go into detail about it when we're in school.
Well, I don't think, I kind of feel like it's one of those subjects where they don't really want to talk about it because most people, I mean, as a general rule, most people don't believe we should have been over there in the first place. So they don't really want to highlight that, and they don't really want to talk about it. And then what happened to the soldiers after they got back home was not good.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a travesty in and of itself.
Yeah.
So I don't think they like talking about that too much because it's not a beacon of light in our history, unfortunately. But we should talk about it for that very reason.
Yeah, doesn't make us look very good now, does it? And yeah,
if only we knew what was going to happen, you know, just a few decades later.
You know, just, you know, 50 years later. But, you know, it is what it is. And there's, you know, there's reasons why we don't talk about it. And like you said, the aftermath of it, it was so different than any other war that we had really been in. If you think about, like, how citizens in the United States kind of felt after the world wars and even the Civil War, there was like this sense of solidarity and triumph and like the good guys won. But after the Vietnam War, it wasn't just that we had failed our soldiers or, you know, that we had done something terrible. It was the fact that citizens in the United States had begun to realize that they had been lied to. They felt gaslit and they felt disillusioned to just the United States as a whole. So it's no wonder that like we don't really talk about it.
Well, unfortunately, I think a lot of the soldiers bore the brunt of that when they really shouldn't have, because they already had PTSD from the things that they saw and did and were told to do and were forced to do. And the American citizens, I don't know that they necessarily knew what they were doing when they handled it the way that they did.
Yeah.
And so it just made a very bad situation that much worse. The people that needed us the most didn't have our support. And that's a really, really sad commentary on a general public.
Yeah. And I'm not going to go into details of what happened in the Vietnam War. It's pretty horrific. I mean, it's awful. Some of the worst things I've ever heard about. So if you're interested in that, go look that up for yourself. But we're not covering that on the podcast. I just wanted to like high level what we're kind of getting into here. They felt the way that I said, the disillusionment, the feeling lied to, gaslit for a myriad of reasons. While in the beginning of the war, public opinion was for the war. It was positive. It was okay. You know, we have to sign up. We have to go and fight for our country, even though we don't really understand what we're fighting for here. There's not really a reason, but there was a sense of like
duty and obligation,
patriotism. Yeah, well, patriotism. Like, yes, we're gonna do this thing. Blah 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 blah. I lost my place. Oopsie.
I'm sorry. I got distracted by Tugger in the background, who has this lovely plush bed and sits and lays down on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a, you know, what? They're not cheap. There's one in every room. And there goes seven. So she's making an appearance too. Hello, ma'am. So yeah, while in the beginning of the war, the opinions were, you know, patriotic. Let's go do this, blah, 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 blah. As time went on, the governmental promises were ignored, or like they even like Uno reversed what they promised the American people. And the public support for the war dwindled. One example of this Uno reversal was from President Nixon. He had been elected in 1968, mainly running on the promise to end the Vietnam War. For a couple of years, it seemed that he was sticking to his campaign promise and military operations were winding down. However, on April 30th, 1970, President Nixon authorized U.S. troops to invade Cambodia, a neutral nation located west of Vietnam. North Vietnamese troops were using safe havens in Cambodia to launch attacks on the U.S.-backed South Vietnamese and parts of the Ho Chi Minh Trail, a supply route used by the North Vietnamese passed through Cambodia. So, in case you don't know, the United States was supporting South Vietnam against North Vietnam. Controversially, the president made his decision without notifying his Secretary of State, William Rogers, or Defense Secretary, Melvin Laird. They, along with the rest of the American public, found out about the invasion when President Nixon addressed the nation on television 2 days later. That's that very famous clip of Nixon. Members of Congress accused the president of illegally widening the scope of U.S. involvement in the war by not receiving their consent through a vote. Which, yes. Yes, and.
100%. Yeah, you don't have complete control over these things. There's a reason why there's checks and balances in the government.
And the fact that you would run on a platform promising something and then UNO reverse that completely, it seems very familiar right now, but it just seemed wrong. Seemed wrong. And so no wonder everybody is mad at you, my guy. And I'm sorry if my husband listens to this. He hates when I say my guy. So while protests had been going on for most of the war, which it makes sense, nobody really understood why we were over there to begin with. This decision by President Nixon set off a nationwide protest. Many of them popped up and took place on college campuses. At Kent State, they actually began protesting the day after the invasion on May 1st. Hundreds of students assembled on the commons at the center of the campus. Many of the speakers there spoke out against the war in general and against President Nixon.
Surprise.
And the commons had been used for like years for assemblies such as this and protests and all that stuff. So this was nothing new. Later that night in downtown Kent, it was reported that there were violent incidents between the local police and the students or the protesters. This is not confirmed, by the way. It is what was reported by the police. The police alleged that their cars were hit with bottles and that the students stopped traffic and lit bonfires in the streets. And I want you to remember the part about the bottles. I mean, I want you to remember everything, but just specifically about the bottles. Neighboring communities were contacted for reinforcements, police officers, whatever. And Kent Mayor Leroy Satram, I don't know, fuck that dude, declared a state of emergency, which actually was declined and they did not go into a state of emergency. He tried to declare it. But because he announced it publicly, everyone assumed that it was a state of emergency or it was martial law at that time. But it wasn't. It wasn't.
Boy, they really had a habit of just declaring stuff, didn't they?
I declare that I am a billionaire. Done. Quit my job. I'm going to podcast 100% of the day away. JK. The mayor also ordered all bars in town be closed. And he contacted Ohio Governor James Rhodes seeking assistance. Closing down the bars seemed to anger the protesters more, according to History.com.
You don't say.
Right? And this led to an increase in protesters on the streets. And I put a note in here. Maybe it just freed them up to join in the protest. You took away their distraction.
Well, and you also gave them another piece of ammunition because now they're mad that you took that away from them. So ones that were probably sitting on the sideline are now like, hey, wait a second, I don't like this either.
Can relate. The police actually ended up that night pushing the protesters back towards campus. But the way that they did this, and it's not confirmed that the protesters were violent. In a lot of accounts, it says that for the most part, they were peacefully protesting. They were just, using their First Amendment right, and they were marching, they were assembling in places They are allowed to assemble, and they were marching. But to push them back to campus, they deployed tear gas, which is god-awful. And I know everybody's going to be like, well, they shouldn't be out there, blah, 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 blah. It's their right. It's their right to do that. The following day, the mayor requested, I'm not going to try and say his last name. The mayor requested that Governor Rhodes send the Ohio National Guard to help calm tensions in the area after rumors that radicals were making threats against the town of Kent and the university. Rumors.
That sounds oddly familiar.
Rumors. And if you're not aware, like, escalating it to Kent State is kind of like the thing that a lot of people use when referencing how escalations happen with protests can go tragically wrong for a reason. Anytime they deploy the National Guard in these situations, it becomes deadly. It is not a successful tactic to maintain protesters. So, my two cents. The National Guard was already in the region at this time and showed up on campus that night. When they arrived, protesters had already set fire to the school's ROTC building and were cheering as it burned. Which, yeah, don't destroy property. That's not yours. That's not cool. Throughout that night, protesters reportedly had altercations with the firefighters attempting to put out the fire and the guardsmen. Dozens of protesters were arrested. And after a night like that, you expect the following day would be Sunday, May 3rd, to be an escalation, right? But it wasn't. The campus was fairly quiet with students sunbathing in the commons. And even several of the same protesters having positive interactions with the guardsmen throughout the day. From like the accounts that I saw, it was like, yeah, it was just like a normal day. There were just a bunch of military people there. It felt dystopian because the military people were there, but everything was fine. But this didn't last. They took a reprieve on Sunday, and the next day, Monday, May 4th, was a very different story. The protesters had scheduled to meet in the commons at noon and began showing up around 11 that morning. There was an estimated 3,000 protesters and spectators there by the time noon came around. And that's only spectators and protesters. University officials did attempt to defuse the situation, I guess. They tried to prohibit the event from happening. They distributed 12,000 leaflets announcing demonstrations were banned. But not all of the students received these leaflets and, in fact, weren't aware of it when classes resumed on Monday. And the reason that's important is because people who weren't even involved in the protest returned to school on Monday, not knowing what was happening. And you also just, like, you can't ban a protest. That's not how that works. Stationed at the now-destroyed ROTC building were roughly 100 Ohio National Guardsmen carrying M1 military rifles. Historians have never reached consensus as to who exactly organized and participated in the Kent State protest, or how many of them were students at the university or anti-war activists from elsewhere. But the protest on May 4th, during which activists spoke out against the presence of the National Guard on campus, as well as Vietnam War, was initially peaceful. It was peaceful until they started telling them that they couldn't do it, started arresting them, started becoming violent with them, and then called in the National Guard. Still, Ohio National Guard General Robert Canterbury ordered the protesters to disperse. With the announcement being made by a Kent State police officer riding in a military jeep across the commons and using a bullhorn. The protesters refused to disperse and began shouting and throwing rocks at the guardsmen. Things escalated quickly. The guardsmen launched tear gas at the students surrounding the bell, then began to advance on them with I still don't understand this. They began to advance on them with bayoneted rifles across the commons. And if you look up pictures of this, it's insane to see, because you have this military force. You've got the military vehicles, all these people in uniform, and just kids. It's literally just kids throwing rocks at people who have bayoneted rifles and M1 military grade weapons. Like, what? They're rocks, my guy.
Seems like an excessive use of force.
Oh, there it is. The next part I actually pulled directly from Britannica.com, since there's like a lot of moving parts and like areas. I didn't want to get them mixed up, and I want to make sure I get the account right. So bear with me on this. You'll understand. I just didn't want to like try to rewrite it and get one group mixed up with another.
Oh, I'm sure things happened and escalated very quickly from this point on.
Yes, ma'am. So the guardsmen with the guns that this part isn't pulled right there. I just want to set it up to get to that point. They're moving across the commons towards this group of kids. And I say kids because if you're in college, you're a fucking kid. Shut up. But they're actually splitting off into two groups. The smaller contingent swept up to the left flank of the slope, forcing demonstrators back and blocking the passageway between Prentice Hall and Taylor Hall to the east. Meanwhile, the larger force marched up Blanket Hill to the west of Taylor Hall, with demonstrators parting or retreating up and over the hill. On the other side of Taylor Hall, the guard descended onto a football practice field that was fenced on three sides. The most aggressive demonstrators were in the parking lot of Prentice Hall, several hundred feet away from the guard, so that most of the rocks they threw fell short of their target. So the rocks weren't even hitting them. More students lined the grounds around Taylor Hall. During their 10-minute stay on the practice field, a number of guardsmen knelt and aimed their rifles at demonstrators. They're already setting it up. Another group of guardsmen huddled briefly, and this prompted speculation that in that moment they had considered to shoot at the demonstrators, that they were already preparing to do it. Not confirmed. It's speculation. This is directly from Britannica. Having effectively dispersed the demonstration, but feeling threatened, the more than 70 guardsmen in this contingent began retracing their steps up the reverse side of the hill towards the commons. So they're moving back. At 12:24 p.m., as they reached the crest of the hill near an umbrella-like concrete architectural feature known as the Pagoda? P-A-G-O-D-A? Okay. 28 guardsmen quickly wheeled back and over the next 13 seconds fired between 61 and 67 shots. Many of the guardsmen discharged their weapons into the air or at the ground, but a number of them fired directly into the crowd.
Like, why? That's not justified in the smallest sense of the word. I don't care how much you think that they're throwing rocks at you. That's not justified.
Mm-mm. That was not. And riot gear and stuff like that, it's supposed to be rubber bullets. It's supposed to be rubber bullets or marbles. It's supposed
Which,
to be
hurt enough.
Non-lethal.
They do plenty of damage. Yeah.
They do.
When did that become a thing, though? Because I've never known. Like, when did they switch? Or has it always been that for protesters? Because I genuinely didn't know.
You know what? That's a good question. I don't know if it was after this. Yeah. Look that up.
The 1980s.
Okay.
So this was, it might have been after this.
After. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. But also, even before that, there's no reason to have fully automatic weaponry to disperse. It's bad enough that they use
tear
gas. Why
did you have to be told you shouldn't shoot people who are doing their right as an American citizen?
That's a good question.
Like, why are we shooting anybody at all in any mm-hmm. situation? If our lives are not being threatened, why are we shooting in retaliation?
No, truly.
And like,
I didn't know that rocks were deadly weapons. You know,
I mean, they can be. So, I mean, if you attack somebody with a rock, you could get assault with a deadly weapon. But throwing it at somebody from quite a distance away, probably not going to kill somebody.
And I can't imagine they were picking up boulders and chunking them at them. Like,
well, if they were, they weren't going to go very far. So, again,
yeah. What damage?
I mean, we don't have Thor and the Hulk in there throwing rocks.
We hope not. Well, maybe. Four students were killed and 9 others were wounded. One of them was actually paralyzed from the waist down. 2 of those killed, Jeffrey Miller and Allison Krause, who fell about 265 feet and 343 feet, that's 81 meters and 105 meters, away from the guard, respectively. That is so far away. They had been actively involved in the demonstration, but the other 2 fatalities, William Schroeder and Sandra Schuer, both shot at a distance of about 390 feet, that's 119 meters, were bystanders on their way to class. The closest victim of the shooting, Joseph Lewis, had been standing about 60 feet, that's 18 meters away from the guard. Later, there would be much debate over why the guardsmen had fired, whether they had been ordered to do so, whether they thought they had been fired upon themselves and shot in defense, or whether a small group of them had indeed conspired to shoot. Because in some places it says that because somebody in the group of guardsmen shot their rifle off either up in the air or at the ground, it started a succession of all of them shooting. But because that they had that congregation beforehand that is documented, they think that they conspired to actually do it. Which, like, I mean, I guess it could go either way.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the possibility of either one.
But you also have to think about where they're standing at the time this happened. The guards are on top of the hill. If they thought that they were in danger, when you're dealing with a civilian population, you should duck and cover behind, I don't know, a hill instead of turning around and shooting into a crowd of kids. But that's just me. I don't know.
In theory.
I don't walk around with a gun in theory. After the shooting, the guards returned to the commons and protesters were pissed. Immediately after the shooting, they just returned to the commons. And protesters are like, going after them because they just killed people
and just kept going just kept going.
Yeah. And thankfully some of the faculty at Kent State talked these protesters down, basically saying, please don't risk your life too. Like, just step back. Let's calm down. And thankfully, that worked. After this, the commons was evacuated, and Kent State President Robert White ordered the university closed, which it did close and remain closed for like 6 weeks. Some places it said longer, some places it said short. It's about 6 weeks. Averages out. In the aftermath, shock, indignation swept across the country like wildfire, with student strikes and demonstrations against the shooting and the Cambodian campaign erupting on hundreds of college campuses during the following weeks. There was also another shooting, and I didn't go into detail on this, but a About 10 days after the Kent massacre, there was another shooting on a college, Jackson State University in Mississippi, that killed two of its students as well after escalations. Due to protesters or demonstrators, quote unquote, throwing bottles at law enforcement.
So is this the line? We're going to just use that line to defend ourselves anytime it comes up?
You guys are so creative. And I'm not 100% sure if the Jackson State University killings are 100% correlated to the Kent State one, because Jackson State is a predominantly Black college. So it might have been, I know that they protested, but I don't know if the killing, I couldn't get a straight answer on that. If the killings were due to protest because of that, or if it was racially motivated. I mean, it could be both for the time.
Not mutually exclusive.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Now, I know. What are your thoughts, real quick?
I mean, I feel like I've shared mine. My main thought right now is you would like to think that we would learn and we would do better. But like I said a couple of times, all of this sounds very familiar.
Yeah, it's very topical. And the reason that I bring it up, obviously, is because there have been protests popping up at colleges around the country. And regardless of what your belief is, whether the protest is something you believe in or not, the escalation of police presence and violence against protesters is something we can all agree on is not okay. As we see more and more protests popping up, there are more and more. The one good thing that we have in this situation is that everybody can record it. So you're getting to see it. So getting to see a protesting kid handcuffed to the ground and having a taser held to him for minutes on end is something that we can see and is something that is happening. And recently, Columbia, and you can say that it's not true or it is true, Columbia University, where a lot of this started, has requested the National Guard, which is not okay. They have been denied the National Guard. And if you look online, a lot of places are going to say, oh, that's fake. Like, they didn't actually request it. But then The Hill, which is a political magazine or news reporting, will say, oh, yeah, they requested it, but we denied it. So you're not going to get a straight answer on a lot of this. You're going to have to look through a lot of that information. But I wanted to bring it to you as like a cautionary tale that regardless of what your belief is, having your rights stripped from you in a violent manner can lead to things like this. Escalating police presence and military presence on peaceful protests will always end in tragedy. So just be like cognizant of that, I guess. I don't know. I'm seeing more and more. I watched a teacher be beaten because he was trying to protect his students from getting arrested recently. Was dragged away and was arrested. Hundreds of students have been arrested over the past week, violently arrested. And all of these protests are peaceful. They're peaceful. They're not doing anything. In one case,
they're not the ones escalating the situation.
No. They are literally standing there, please don't touch me. I'm not doing anything, you know. And the law enforcement is being very aggressive, and this is not okay. They have a right to protest, and that is why I put that at the beginning of this. They have a right to be there. Doing what they're doing is not okay. So yeah, I don't really know where to go from there.
Good job covering a very difficult situation in a respectful way, I feel. And yeah, it's timely. It's a nice little reminder to, I don't know. Stand up for what you believe in. And if you plan on being at any protests, make sure you have your camera ready, i.e. your phone, to record anything and everything.
And just remember, I did put resources in the show notes. If this is still going on by Friday, when it comes out next Friday, you can go on there. You can print out this information. You can write in contact information. You can write in local activist lawyers who will come and support you if you get arrested. There's also tips on the best way to dress, on the best way to protect yourself from things like tear gas.
And which, unfortunately, it's very unfortunate you have to have all of that. But if you are going to stand up for what you believe in, do it in the safest way possible.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, we don't want anyone to die or be permanently harmed. And if you want to make change, that's your right. But remember that. That's your right.
In fact, that's often how change is made. It starts somewhere. And people getting together and collectively making it aware, making others aware that this is a problem that's not just going to go away.
Yeah. And I think that's really important to remember, too. What you're doing is making a change. And it's working. If it wasn't working, it wouldn't be what is happening today wouldn't be happening. It's working. And we're proud of you for standing up for what you believe in. Here at Reaper Tales.
Very much so.
Anyways, that's it.
Y'all be safe out there. We love you. We mean it.
We mean it. Okay, bye. Before we end this episode, I thought it would be important to go over a few safety tricks if you find that you will be protesting anytime soon. I know that we said a few things in the episode, but I wanted to ensure that you had more of a summary of some things that you can do just to help in your safety and your fellow protesters' safeties. So let's get right into it. The first thing you want to do before you go is to ensure that you have a plan. This means informing at least one trustworthy person outside of the protest what your plan is, where you will be, how long you will be there, and contact information for anyone else who may be with you and your lawyer. You will want to wear long sleeves and pants, as well as a face covering, and preferably eye protection. If you have long hair, secure it in a bun, not a ponytail or a braid, as those can quickly become handholds. Long sleeves and pants may be uncomfortable in the heat, but it has two purposes. First, to protect against contact with any type of chemical that could be used, and to hide any identifying marks such as birthmarks and tattoos. If you have piercings, it is recommended to cover those with band-aids or to remove or obscure them. Do not, under any circumstances, wear contacts. Many chemicals used on protesters can melt them. Wear glasses, and if possible, wear eye protection. It is recommended to leave your devices at home. Those things can track you, but this isn't always possible. If you do need to take your phone with you, make sure to switch off face and thumb unlock and disable your location. Turn off notifications on your home screen, your home like lock screen. Disable Siri and Alexa and leave your phone on lock with a key lock. Do not take any photos or videos of any other protester's face. You should bring a change of clothes, fully charged device if you are bringing one, plenty of water for hydration and to clean off any chemicals you may come into contact with. If you have signs or banners, do not put them on posts or sticks, as the police can reference those as weapons. There are several websites for local lawyers who are working specifically with protests. Find one before you go and write their contact information on your arm. I've seen where some people are using Second Skin or Tegaderm tape to ensure that it doesn't get washed away. That's the tape that you use after a tattoo. It stays on very securely. If you see someone who has come into contact with tear gas, assist them out of the crowd and help them rinse it off. They will not be able to get out without assistance. Do not touch your face or eyes if you come into contact with it. If you require medication, ensure it is in its prescription bottle and on you if you are detained. If at all possible, avoid police or military encounters. If you do find yourself being stopped by an officer, ask them if you are free to go. If they say no, ask them if you are under arrest. If they say no, you are free to go. If you are arrested, calmly state you are not resisting and request name and badge number for someone near you to write that down. Do not speak to the police. The only time that you should speak to them after being arrested is to give your name and ID with a current address. This is all you should give them. You may be submitted to fingerprinting, but check your state's requirements for iris scanning and DNA. Do not give them your phone unless they have a search warrant. They are not allowed to delete any photos or videos from your device, and they shouldn't be able to gain entry to your device if you disabled fingerprint or face scanning to unlock it. Do not sign anything that they give you and wait for your lawyer before speaking or signing anything. Do not give them names of other participants. Stay quiet. If you call a lawyer for advice, the police are not allowed to listen. If you see someone else being arrested, ask for their name and date of birth to ensure they receive assistance. Lastly, stay safe and take care of each other. Listen to your protest coordinators and know your rights within your state and country before you go.
The Reaper will come for us all.
Can you hear him?
Yeah, a little bit.
Let's let him wind himself down. Oh, he's doing the circle. Almost comfortable. Nope, let me continue.
Scratch this bed some more. Get it just right.
I just love spending $60 on a memory foam mattress for it to not be soft enough.
Yeah, and then he gets out of it.
Great. Great. I can hate it here. Oh my God.
Hey, in our house, I have my three dogs, which are, I have two beds. One fits two, one fits the other one. And the cat, Howl, will get on the big bed in the middle of it to curl up to the dogs. And the two dogs will get out of the bed, give him the whole big bed. And then they'll lay on the floor in front of the bed, looking at me very, very pitifully, like, We can't lay in the bed because he has it now.
Well, they're afraid they'll catch us stupid.
That's fair. I really would rather they didn't.